was on an August morning, all in the morning hour, I went to take the warming air all in the mouth of flower. And there I saw
το πηδικτό του βήμα, το γέλιο. σκοτώσαν οι εχθροί μας το γέλαστο παιδί.
This is a story of a song. A song that went on a mysterious journey from Ireland to Greece. The song, The Laughing Boy, was written by Brendan Behan as a young man, possibly for his mother. And it is this curious story which became an interesting two-year in-depth documentary into the history of two similar worlds. Screenwriter Theo Dorgan explores the link between Behan and legendary composer Mikis Theodorakis, starting from Ireland, going back to Greece's political history and uprising, to return to Ireland with a new song, and how this song changed many people's world. I'm Katerina Badzaiki, and in this week's Infinitely Curious program, we will explore how The Laughing Boy from Brendan Behan's play The Hostage became the inspirational anthem of the political left in Greece. The boy, the man, the palikari, the figure that inspired generations to aspire to their freedom and independence. I met Theo Dorgan in the screening of his documentary at the French Institute, where with a spark in his eyes, he started describing this very interesting endeavor of his into this freedom journey of two people with similar backgrounds, the Irish and the Greeks, and his intimate 40-year relationship with Greece.
I've been coming here for over 40 years, and it's my second home spiritually. And of course, when I was a young student, I was reading the Greek writers and translations, Seferis, Elites, Kavafis especially. I adore Kavafis. And like many Irish people, especially people of my generation, we're often in Greece. It's the country in Europe we feel most spiritual affinity with. Perhaps an intellectual affinity with France, with Paris in particular, but there's a spiritual affinity with Greece. Every single time I step off the plane at Venizelos, I grow about 3 centimeters. Because in Ireland, it rains so much, our heads are down, but when I come to Greece, the head goes up. And for the last 16 years, my partner and I, we've been coming to Therma in Ikaria and to work. My wife came to Ikaria first, long before she became my wife. She had been teaching Auden's poem at the Musée des Beaux-Arts in Bruxelles, where there's a portrait, a very famous Bruegel painting, The Fall of Icarus. Icarus is a tiny figure in the bottom right-hand corner of the painting. She needed somewhere quiet to finish a collection of poems. She is, I think, the best poet of her generation. And a Hellenophile from before I was. She's been coming here 45, 50 years. And we found Ikaria on the web, and we found Vula Manolaros, who's the chatelaine of a pension called Agriolicus, the place of the wild wolf. And she phoned her, and she went, and she was the only person there because the season in those days started on the 1st of June. And Vula flew in a few days later to make sure she was all right. And she finished the book, and that September we both went back to Korea, and that was it. It was home. Partly, I think, the atmosphere, the actual tangible atmosphere of the island, also because the kind of collective mind of Ikaria, everybody looks after everybody else. In Irish, the word we have for that is mehel. If a neighbour needs work done, you automatically help them, immediately. And so we found an affinity with that in the people. We love the music, it's a very particular music in Ikaria. And then to jump forward to the film, Catherine Baird, the producer, came to me in Dublin and said, I have this idea for a film, because she knew the story of how the laughing boy became To Yalisto Pedi. And of course I immediately said, yep, I get it, because it's poetry, it's music, it's politics, it's democracy, it's liberty. Okay? And the original song written by Brendan Behan is about Michael Collins, the hero of our war of independence. But Collins is a figure who would be very familiar in Greece because he's a palikari. And it was the palikari in Michael Collins that Brendan Behan was celebrating. And so, of course, because in Greece, the idea of the palikari, the smiling hero, the one who has an affinity with ordinary people and their dreams and hopes, and, you know, that was a natural connection for me. And then, of course, Theodorakis, I mean, we venerate Theodorakis because Theodorakis understood a very important thing, that no matter who is in power, left, center, right, the true memory of a people is carried in its poems and in its songs. And the extraordinary insight of Theodorakis that it is possible to bring the poems of Seferis, of Ritsos, true song to the people. Mm-hmm. That's an extraordinarily important insight. We had a singer, Frank Hart, a great singer and collector of songs, who said, the winners write the histories, the losers write the songs. And true memory is carried by the people, by the ordinary people, the people who sing.
Had he died by Pierce's side or in the GPO, killed by an English bullet from the rifle of the foe, or forcibly fed while Ash lay dead in the dungeons of Mountjoy, I'd have cried with pride at the way he died, my own dear laughing boy.
This is an Irish story, isn't it?
It is, but it's also a Greek story because, you know, when you think of Lambrakis, mm-hmm. Lambrakis was a quite extraordinary man, and he was murdered because he believed in liberty, Eleftherios. He believed in democracy. He believed in the right of ordinary people to live their lives. But that's why the Irish War of Independence was fought. And the foundation layer for the Irish movement to independence was not in politics, it was in culture. Okay. People remembered their past through the songs. They made a new future in songs of hope and aspiration. There was a revival at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century in Ireland, of pride. Because you must remember, we were a colonized people. Yeah. Our language, the Irish language, had been forbidden in law by the British. So when people began again to speak the language, when they began again to speak the old poems, when they began to make new poems, when they began to celebrate the music they had been told was peasant music, inferior music, not art, when people began to realize that a folk song is true art, then out of that came the movement for political independence. And so that's a very familiar story in Greece.
You were the fortunate ones compared to the Scots and the Welsh. I mean, the Scots
yes.
didn't manage succeed in that respect.
No, they didn't, because the Act of Union, the Scottish Act of Union, took place 200 years before ours did, and Scottish law was suborned into English law. When we became independent, we used the laws of the British, but we turned them against them. But we took their language, and we made ourselves better at our language, that the English language, than the English are. If you stop and think, at the end of the 20th century, into the beginning of the 21st century, where is all the great imaginative writing in English coming from? Not from England. It's coming from Australia, New Zealand, America, Canada, India. And so it's the revenge of the colonized is to take the weapon of the enemy and turn it against them.
We proceeded down to a place called Clonakilty. And from Clonakilty on into Crookstown. But before we came into Crookstown, we had to come, of course, through Beal na Bláth. The firing started immediately. It was an ideal place for an ambush. It was made for an ambush. And General Michael Collins stood up and had a gaze around him. He was loading his rifle in the meantime. And whilst he was loading his rifle, one long shot, apparently like from a sniper, rang out and hit him in the side of the head, the right-hand side there, fell down and he never spoke again.
Why is Michael Collins a hero in Ireland?
Michael Collins...
He's just smiling.
He was extraordinarily efficient commander of the Irish War of Independence. He set up the intelligence apparatus which allowed a small guerrilla army to fight a fixed army to a standstill, because he was director of intelligence. But he had charisma. In the 21st century, we no longer speak about charisma, that magnetic power of the soul. He had that. And he had an instinctive feeling for ordinary people, for their small hopes, their little dreams. You know, in our time...
Given the little time he had.
He was 32. But the same age as Alexandros, the same age as Alexander the Great. There may even be something in the human psyche that the great heroes die young. We have this all through Greek literature. We have it, you know, in the Judeo-Christian tradition. Jesus was a year older than Michael Collins or Alexander the Great. So in our Bronze Age myth, the Antoine Bo Hoolinger, Cú Chulainn, the great hero, who would be the Irish Achilles, he is given a choice as a young boy to live a long, fruitful, peaceful life and be forgotten, or to become a hero who will die young but he'll never be forgotten. And he chose to be the hero. Now, Collins didn't want to die. Collins wanted to build a new republic, and he was shot in the Civil War. And our Civil War, unlike the Greek Civil War, was not an ideological war. Both sides wanted the same thing. They just disagreed about how to get there.
It was an ambush.
He died in an ambush, and it was an accident. It wasn't intended for him. It was a guerrilla band retreating back to their base. They saw a small convoy, and they hurriedly got into position. They just fired on. They didn't know who it was. But the difference is, in Toyalastopedi, in Vasilis Rota's translation, it says the enemy killed our laughing boy. Then it became, it was our own who killed the laughing boy, which is in the original Irish. And then it became, in 1973-74, the fascists killed our laughing boy.
Παραγέρα στην ανθισμένη γη. Βλέπω μια κόρη κλαίει σπαρακτή καθρινή, σπάσε καρδιά με χάτι το γελαστό παιδί. Είχε έναν τριά και θάρρος και όνειρα θα θρυνώ, το πηδικτό του βήμα, το γέλιο το γλυκό. Σκοτώσαν οι εχθροί μας στο γέλαστο παιδί. Γόνατα σκοτωμένος του αρχηγού το πλάι και μόνον από πόλη Εγγλέζου να είχε πάει. Κι από απεργία πείνας μέσα στη φυλακή θα ήταν τιμή μου που χάσα το γέλαστο παιδί. Βασιλικιά μ' αγάπη θα στο λέω, για το τι έκανες αιώνια θα σε κλαίω. Για ποιόλους τους εχθρούς μας τα ξέκανες εσύ, δόξα τιμής θα ξέχαστο γέλαστο παιδί.
In people who have had to struggle for independence, who don't naturally gain it, and people who don't gain independence through the actions of a military aristocracy, but from the ground up, the ordinary people up, there is a veneration for the smiling hero, the careless hero, who has a big heart and does not fear death. And So you have that figure in Lambrakis. You have it in a different sense in Theodorakis. You have it in Farantouri, who's absolutely wonderful woman. And it's a dream of democracy that never dies. Democracy isn't a political system owned by the rulers. Democracy really means the demos. It means nothing unless it comes from underneath and speaks to. I always ask of a politician, what is your option for the poor? But under the politics is something else entirely. And that's the culture, the soul of a people.
Paris seemed to have nurtured both the lives of Mikis Theodorakis and Brendan Behan. It was at the Royal Theatre in London's Stratford East that the Behan's play The Hostage was staged after some adaptation by radical director John Littlewood. It catapulted the playwright into instant fame. Behan won the main award at an international drama festival but maintained his strong sense of character and humour.
Well, since you've had this success, you've become something of quite of a literary figure in London.
Yes.
Are there any aspects of this sort of existence that you don't enjoy?
Well, I don't enjoy it being interviewed.
The word of the success of the play The Hostage spread as far as Athens. Neither Theodorakis nor Behan knew that their creative souls would meet at some point. But Greek director Leonidas Trevisas secured the Greek rights to the play. Suddenly, the laughing boy was transformed into the γελαστό παιδί. Theodor Gunn explains very well the story behind it.
The laughing boy is not sung by Irish singers much, very little, because it's not a very good tune. The music isn't
really
very good.
I really like that tune. I know, but it was made into a play as well.
Yes,
it?
Well, what happened was when Brendan Behan's play, Omulos, The Hostage, won Play of the Year, European Play of the Year in Paris in 1959, and the Greek rights were acquired, and Vasilis Rotas did the translations, and Mikis made the music. Mikis' music is infinitely superior to the original music. The original music is fairly pedestrian. And it was the magical combination of three things: the image of the hero, the words, and the music. So the Rotas translation it's very good, but it's not a huge jump from the original English.
But it's an Irish heritage.
Yes.
Weren't they, some Irish, annoyed? Like, it travelled from one history
yes.
to another history.
Yes. But, you see, you must understand that Irish people love Greece. They admire Greece. They are aware that before we fought for our independence, the Greeks did. But you also have to understand that through the Irish language, there is much more of an inheritance from Greek, from theatre, from philosophy, from poetry, than there is in the English that we have in Irish. So in the Irish tradition, Greece has always been an emblem of the struggle for liberty. We have a word in Irish, Saoirse. And Saoirse is very close to Eleftherias. It's much closer than it is to freedom or liberty or any of the English words. Because the English language idea of liberty is conditional. Liberty is granted by those in power. Our idea of Saoirse is, I choose my freedom, and then you choose yours, and she chooses hers, and she chooses her. And between us we become free. But we are all of us free. It's not granted. It's expected. It's endemic in the human condition. And that is why songs and poems are so powerful.
And you think Theodorakis actually succeeded in that?
Theodorakis? Yes. And Theodorakis is very well known in Ireland. Irish musicians know him very well. Farantouri is very well known. Dalaras is known. And we sense that in an unformulaic way, both cultures are feeling their way towards the same thing, which is to be full and human. And one of the reasons why Ikaria is central in my imagination is we understand that if you are not free, I am not free. It's all of us together. All of us are none of us.
What parallels can you draw between your Irish past and our Greek past? And of course present, because...
Well, I think the sense of the tragic. We understand tragedy. They said, the English said of Ireland in the 19th century, all their wars are merry and all their songs are sad. But, you know, it was the merry songs that kept the spirit alive. I think if you excavate both cultures, what you will find is the idea that every individual life matters. but it gets its full expression if it's shared with others. And that is very strong in Greece. Whatever the formal ideological politics are, these come and go. There is an unbroken idea. You can trace it back to Sophocles, you can trace it back to Aeschylus, you can trace it back to the Odyssey. The idea that all lives matter. And in Ikaria, I've said this already, I know, in Ikaria it's all of us or none of us. That's our Irish sense of life as well. Nobody admires the man who climbs over other people to achieve popularity or fame. It has to be granted. You don't fight for it or work for it. It's granted. You don't. There is no career path for the Palikari. Palikari is born. She is born or he is born with an open soul, with automatic care for other people. There was no reason for Michael Collins to become a rebel, except that he looked around and in the songs he learned as a child, the songs were of the yearning for freedom. And the people he grew up amongst were not respected in their lives, but he respected them. And so he was formed by his culture as a hero. He just happened to have that extra charge of energy, that charisma that enabled him to stand out. But I think if we had achieved full independence, he would have stepped aside. Who knows what he might have done? He would have stepped aside.
I heard this amazing story. When the black slaves were working very hard and pushed to work under horrid conditions, they were actually forced not to speak while they were working.
Yes.
So they would find a code of communication between them. Mm-hmm. They would tap their shoes, or they would make some gestures and some noises. And later on Sundays, they would incorporate that into music.
Yes.
And they would make this into a dance.
Yes.
Do you think that music and lyrics and art, actually great art, derives from hardships and difficult situations?
It has historically, but sometimes people make the mistake of thinking it is only from hardship that art emerges. It's defiance. We laugh in the face of death. You know, the Buddhists teach us that the way to live a full life is every day to say to yourself, I must die. And if you know that you must die, every moment becomes precious. And if music is what lifts and feeds the soul, then in times of hardship, music becomes a kind of temporary salvation. It saves the life. And I think that it's true, what you say is absolutely true, that great art can come from hardship. But great art also comes from the steady, slow accumulation of a tradition. So when Brendan Behan wrote The Laughing Boy, his entire family and the network of families they were connected with had taken the other side in the Civil War, Michael Collins. But he knew, he came from a tradition, all his family sang. His mother was a famous singer, not professional, but she was known everywhere as a singer. He drew on a store of tradition, of songs, tunes, the music itself, it's a variation of other tunes. The words go back to words in other ballads. So he drew from the tradition through the living moment and made something new. Because I absolutely believe, and I know I'm right, that you cannot make anything new unless you're connected to a tradition. It's simply arbitrary. And the tradition of the hero who defies death by laughing in its face, it's very deep in Ireland. It's very deep in Greece.
The journey of Theodore Gunn's Laughing Boy takes us back to the history of modern Greece and to the life of Mikis Theodorakis, drawing parallels to the life of Behan, but describing Theodorakis as a fervent advocate of left-wing political causes, who during the bitter civil war that followed World War II, he was exiled to the island of Ikaria.
I enjoyed a part of your documentary where, apart from the landscapes in Ikaria, which I found tremendous, the fact that you made a comment saying, when Theodorakis actually arrived there, and it was an exile island, and, you know, it felt for you as home, it felt very safe to be in Ikaria, but at the same time, he was aware that he was in exile. So it was this exile that inspired him to write the songs.
That's one way of looking at it. And perhaps we didn't adequately draw it out in the documentary, but it was the example of his other fellow prisoners also lifted and freed his heart. Because if you remember, we say in the film that he would go out by day and he would compose songs, and at night he would teach them to the other prisoners in the House of the Scorpions, and they would sing them together. So his contribution to their collective well-being was to make the songs, and theirs was to learn them and to sing them. So that makes a communion of spirits. But he made those songs for people, trusting them that the words would mean something to them and that the music would lift them and him. So that was an important lesson for him. When he came to write the music for Epitaphios, he was in exile in Paris and sitting in his car, and the rain was falling on the car, and he said, out of nowhere, like a spring of fresh water, all this music bubbled up. Now, no composer and no poet can say with certainty where a particular song or a particular piece of music comes from. We can't say that. I always say, I don't write my poems, the poems write me. But you must be there for that to happen. And what happened, I think, to Mickey's in Ikaria was he had fought against the Nazis, he had fought for his country, he believed in his country, and his country put him into exile as a prisoner. Well, that's a lot to think about. But he's living impossibly poverty-stricken in a beautiful place. And his gift is beginning to speak through him. That's a powerful set of circumstances. But his impulse and what made him great was to share it immediately with his fellow prisoners. And when they learned the songs, that confirmed the gift.
My father says that he first listened to Todorakis' music in the early 60s, 61 or 62. And then during the dictatorship, there were little what it was called what it's a music a small music hall, and they used to sing during the dictatorship, they used to sing Todorakis songs late at night among friends. And he says that Theodorakis brought poetry and education to the people who didn't have any education. It was an open university for the illiterate people to have access to poetry.
There's Alexandros, who's 84 now, who speaks in the film with his daughter Athena. Alexandros came at the age of 12 from Epiros to Athens for work on his own, a boy of 12. Seeking work because they were so poor in Epiros at that time. And at night they would close the shutters on the taverna and they would go downstairs and he would learn songs by the Theodorakis. They couldn't sing them in public or they'd be arrested. And what he says is, I went to the University of Theodorakis. And he said, yeah, here I learned of Seferis, of Ritsos, of Elitis, of Kavafis. I learned the great true poems of the Greek spirit, because the music of Theodorakis brought them to me. And that man, who never went to school, every day of his life he reads a book, every day since. A boy of 12 who's grown to be a man of 84, and he says, I went to the University of Theodorakis. You could say history moves through the great artist. It speaks through him. But you must be prepared. And when Theodorakis went to Ikaria, he had studied in Paris with Olivier Messiaen. He was imbued in the spirit of Byzantine music. And he heard the Rebetika for the first time from his fellow prisoners. And also, and nobody speaks of this, but there is a very, very strong dance music tradition in Ikaria. To this day, the mikros, the little children are learning it. It's very independent music, but there's a great lift in it. And they have their own dance, Ikariotiko.
5 years ago, I traveled to Ikaria and I spoke to the locals, and they told me that they left, abandoned them deliberately, the government, because at those days, in those days, they were communists, and communists coming to the island. So they were punishing the locals by not building roads, infrastructures, nothing for the island. But still, The locals of Ikaria were very supportive towards, you know, the prisoners.
Oh, yeah, they took them into their own homes.
They took them into their own homes.
In the Civil War, they didn't build a camp like on Makronisos. on Ikari, because they said, the whole damn island is full of Reds. Why build something with a fence around it? Put them on the island. But to this day, Ikarian children have the highest rate of take-up of university places of any other island, more of the Trinbago, because who came 47, 48, 49 to Cairns? Professors from the Polytechnia, artists, musicians, teachers. And the island absorbed a spirit of respect for education. Unlike many other islands, a profound respect for education. The size happens. The population is about 5,500. It's a small island. It's mostly the Etheros with little settlements around the edge. But the people also have a sense of history's ironies, because the road from Agios Kyrikos to Evdilos was built by the military, so they could get their soldiers around the island, you know.
The rest is a disaster. They're still trying to get a road right, at least up to Amalu.
But, you know, the motto of the island is also Siga, Siga. Who's in a hurry? If you can't drive at 80 kilometres, drive at 50. The old people worked very hard up and down the mountains. The man who makes my tsipuro, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't want him in trouble, but he's a marvellous man. He used to walk 5 kilometres to school and 5 kilometres back every day, down the mountain, back up the mountain. And if you'd look at him, you'd think, oh, he's a shepherd or a roadmender. He is a sophisticated man who has retained everything he learned as a child at school. He works his own little farm, and everybody comes to him for advice. And that's also very common, was until recently, in the Irish countryside, that everybody knew, if you have a problem, go to Joseph or Leonidas or Marina or Maria or Vula. They're the ones who know. So the society outside the formal structure arranges itself. This woman is a healer. This man is good with animals. This man is good with... This boy is good on IT. And, you know, scale alters fact. The scale of the island contributes to that.
How long did it take you to do the film and to finish it?
Well, Katharina had been thinking of it for 10 years, and she finally found a company willing to make it, and the film was commissioned by the Irish language channel, TG4, TG Cahir in Irish. And she came to me in Dublin and said, I'd like to do this. I said, I'll do it, we'll do it, but we must get the best film director in Ireland today, Alan Gilsonen, to direct it. Alan said immediately yes. So I wrote a story for the film, and it took us from that point about 2.5 years to get it made. Now, we had to source archive footage. As you've seen yourself, there's archive that nobody has ever seen.
That's what I saw too, yeah.
And it's very touching. But you see, here's how the world
Where did you get that archive?
You'd have to ask Katharina. I have so many things going on in my mind. If I don't need to know a thing, okay, I don't ask. Fine. She got it, and that was American. But here's an example. At the moment, in my house in Dublin, there is a young boy staying who is looking for work in Ireland. He is the son of friends from Ikaria. Yeah? So he saw the film. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the sequence where we talk about the tank breaks through the gates of the Polytechnia, and there's a young woman standing there, and her legs get crushed? And Donnie's mother was a medical student at Polytechnia. She was the one who ran to that girl and tried to fix her wounds. I spoke of Alexandros from Epiros. His daughter Athena was in Agriolikos of Therma when I was there, and she was there the day before I flew to Athens to do the Athens interviews. And she told me that in 1973, she went with her father to a big Theodorakis concert on her father's shoulders. And she was frightened because everybody was singing these forbidden songs. She thought the police would come. She was 5. Her mother was pregnant. On the way home, the trains had stopped, the buses had stopped. Her father, little man, you know, stopped the police car and got the police to drive them home because his wife was pregnant. But Athena, who was 5, thought they were being arrested for singing the songs. So she tells me this story over a glass of tsipuro at night. We all go to our beds, and the next morning she comes to me in tears, said, Mikis died during the night. You know? So the whole film is a mystery wrapped inside a mystery. All these things happened. You know? Why? Who knows? I think, you know, I say we don't write the poems write. I think this film made itself.
Do you think things happened by chance?
some things happen by chance, but, you know, the muse is a very familiar figure in the tradition of Irish poetry, just as it is in Greek poetry. And Paula Meehan, our great poet, says, well, it helps if I'm sitting at my desk every day so that if the muse wants me, she knows where to find me. And I think this is why, you know, there's a saying now that to master a craft takes 10,000 hours. Well, yes, that's right.
If you were to name some core ethical values in this film, what would those values be?
Love other people. Love and respect other people. And the more powerless they are, the greater the moral obligation to love and respect them.
Do you think we can love people through music?
Yes. Yes. We can love people through music because music is what opens the soul to love. Music opens us to a greater idea of ourselves. The imagination is a deep human power. Anything that touches and amplifies the imagination contributes to making us free.
What is that puzzled you in this film and made you feel a little bit afraid? Because it is a huge responsibility.
I wanted people to feel there is truth in the film. You ask what my great fear was. My great fear was that I would be like, that I would come like a tourist skating over the surface. And this is the reason why, we won the audience award at Thessaloniki, at the documentary festival. That award means more to us than the Golden Alexandros given by a jury. This was from the audience. At the end of the screening in Thessaloniki, Krasula Kohiagolu stood up and sang, and the audience joined in. Then I knew we had told the truth.
Are you fulfilled now? Are you happy?
No, I have more things to write. I'm worried about what I'm trying to write at the moment, you know. I'm very happy with this. And you see, the thing is, Alan is a gifted director, and in cinema nowadays we think the director is the auteur. It's an idea that came from the French cineasts of the 1950s. But we made this together. And everyone who contributed, Labrini Ghiotti, who sings so beautifully, Varan Turi, the beloved Varan Turi, our musicians, the people we interviewed, everybody brought something large and unexpected, new perspectives, new feelings. And so I think we made it all together. So what we think is we have been of service to this film, which has made itself.
Was the Alex aware of the making of this film?
Oh, yes, he was. Unfortunately, we had extensive emails, especially Alan Gilson and the director and himself, and he very much regretted that he was too ill. You must remember he was dying. He died while we were making the film. We'd already shot some of the film when he died.
Did we show him some?
No, we hadn't time. We hadn't time.
Yeah.
And it's a great sorrow. But there's a moment which I treasure in the film when we're talking to Varan Turi. And she sings a great Irish song, The Last Rose of Summer. And she sings a few, and then our Irish musicians on the traditional pipes join in. And there's a close-up of her, and she's singing the line, all your lovely companions are faded and gone. And you can see in her eyes, she's thinking of Mickey's. She's thinking that he's gone now. And that moment, and I think, what is it that an Irish song of the 19th century in the English language can touch a genius like Varan Turi so deeply that I can see in her eyes what she is feeling and who she is thinking of? That's the power. We must come to art the way we come to fire. It can burn you.
'Tis the last rose of summer left blooming alone. All her lovely companions are faded and gone. No flower of her kindred, no rose but his nigh to reflect back her blood. your side.
So, big heart or great mind?
I don't think it's possible to have a great heart without having a clear mind. I don't think that's possible. It's rare, the combination. Many people have good hearts, but a great heart like that of Mickey's, or Brendan Behan, or Valenturi, or Lambrakis, that's rare. We should ask ourselves, why is it that we make songs about such people? Why is it that we trust those people to keep our memories for us? It's a question I don't have an answer for, but it's a very good question.
Feelings, emotions, songs, memories. They all bring up a spirit of joy, liveliness, and makes us want to stay alive.
There is a piece of film which I saw on YouTube, where Anthony Quinn is 83 or 84, he's hardly able to walk, and he comes on stage at a concert of Mickey's, and Mickey's starts the orchestra, the bouzoukis to play Zorba's Dance, and Anthony Quinn throws off his coat and dances. He can barely walk, but he dances. The music lifts him. That's power. That's power. That's the power of art. Look it up, Catalina. It's a beautiful moment. He becomes young again just for that moment, and the head goes up. It's so beautiful.
In this amazing power and stamina that Theodor Gahn describes, το γελαστό παιδί transcends traditions, democratic and ethical values to return to its hometown, Ireland, in its new revised form. A blend of two cultures, the Irish and the Greek, that show through this insightful documentary how many more γελαστά παιδιά can relate to the song and its essence of freedom and justice. I'm Katerina Badzaki. Join us again in 2 weeks from now in another of our Infinite Curious programs. Meanwhile, have a happy Easter week and keep the faith of who you are and the freedom of the laughing boy you wish to be.
On an August morning, all in the morning hour, I went to take the warming air all in the mouth of flowers, and there I saw.
Mora Surya.